Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to bridging the gap between adventure and adventurer by helping people select vehicles that fit one's lifestyle. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Whether she deliberately set out to or not, Molly Barker has been on a lifelong journey to understand others and to spread that understanding. She started by working with young girls in an organization called Girls on the Run. Yes, it was about fitness and body image, but it was also about girls understanding their place in the world and how to become confident young women capable of expanding that influence. But that wasn't enough. Molly soon turned her attention to helping people breach the divides that separate us both personally and politically, first with another organization she created called the Red Boot Way, and then during a year working in Washington, listening and trying to figure out a way to have our dysfunctional Congress work together. I'm not sure that was a successful effort. She also spent time traveling the country, talking to complete strangers in an effort to understand them and their points of view. Doing those things has to make you smarter somehow. And now she's put some of what she's learned into a book of essays called The Wisdom Stories, Finding Wisdom in the Ordinary. Molly Barker joins us for the rest of the hour. Welcome back.
Thank you.
How would you characterize that year in Washington?
You know, at this moment, I don't think I know anything. And I think not knowing is probably a good place to be. You know, it just keeps me wide open to whatever's in front of me. In Washington, I have to say that I went very wide-eyed and optimistic about what was possible, and I came back very disheartened. Mm-hmm. And as someone who has worked with children my whole life, I felt like I had actually been telling them a lie. You know, that if you are empathic and compassionate and understanding and if you listen, things are going to be okay. And that was not the experience that I had there. You know, so I felt like there was actually a ceiling, like we have to play the game in order to get to Washington. And so I left very disheartened.
Wow. I didn't anticipate that as an answer.
Yeah.
Because your whole, some of these stories, these wisdom stories, mm-hmm. as I read through the book yesterday, mm-hmm. talk about that, deal with that. It's the very actions that the people that you spoke to, being empathetic, mm-hmm. being understanding, being kind,
are
the things that you've always talked about and you're telling in this book, and you're saying that maybe that's not enough.
I actually think it is enough, and what I've noted, and here's what I need to say, is that I can only speak what I know, and what I know for myself and the experiences that I've had, that the shifts that are necessary, that are going to bring change to the world, don't, for me, occur in the one-on-one, the face-to-face, the connection that I have in any one moment with someone else. And I wasn't able to do that in Washington, D.C. The stories and the narratives were much bigger than what was possible in a one-on-one. So that's where I believe the hope comes. So as I'm listening to what's going on in my city and watching what's flourishing on social media, I just have to take a few deep breaths and go to the people that I don't understand and sit down and just have that one-on-one conversation. Mm-hmm. And I'm not suggesting that it's for everyone, but I know that it's what I do.
If you don't understand them, mm-hmm. chances are they don't understand mm-hmm. you. So is it a two-way conversation? Are you fundamentally just listening and asking questions to elicit more information and a greater understanding of them? Or are they as curious about you as you are about them? And has there been an interchange? Has there been any mind changing, or at least the opening of doors to understanding on both sides?
I know I'm thinking of a couple stories, and actually an experience I had yesterday talking with a woman who grew up in a very, very conservative, extremely evangelical home. Mm-hmm. And she shared a story about an encounter she had in a Caribou Coffee. And this one exchange was like a pearl on a necklace. It was the first something that cracked her open a little bit. And then she was more open to the next encounter and the next encounter. And those are what is in this book, are the small little, just a moment of, like, let's say I'm in a conversation with someone and I feel resistance. Instead of reacting to the resistance, observing it and then saying, what's that about?
As I read some of these stories
yesterday,
that's the impression that I got, that this is a moment, an instant. It's like that quick of a flash of empathy, a flash of understanding, mm-hmm. and then it's gone, almost like it wasn't there. How do you hang on to that and tie these events together so that you begin to change, or at least you begin to see the other point of view?
Yeah, I know, again, it's back to, for me, when I have a moment like that, and I have them all the time. There's a story in here about a friend of mine named Patrick who first sort of woke me up to white privilege. Yeah.
Boy, did he.
And that, once I have had just a small connection like that or an awakening, I can't unsee it. Or I guess I could deny it, but I can't unsee it. And that's what those little inflection points do for a person.
Let's talk about Patrick for a second, because that's one of the stories that you tell in your book, and I'm trying to, it's an essay, I think, called Being White. And in Being White, you talk about giving a presentation, because you do this all over the country now. You go around and you make speeches, and you talk about the things that you've learned, and you talk about various aspects of what you do. And you asked in this particular meeting at the end of your talk, what your impressions were as listeners. What did you think? What went through your head as I spoke? And this guy in the front of the room, this black guy in the front of the room, said two words, white privilege. What went through your mind?
Well, at the moment, I was only new to this, brand new to this.
Right.
And I felt my whole being just sort of fall onto the floor. Like, oh my God, I don't really know what this guy is saying. So there was this pause for a moment, and this is when I can either respond with resistance, like reject what he has said, or just go full in, you know? So I looked at him in front of an audience of people and said, I'm not exactly sure what you mean by that. And he responded, well, you asked what I thought about it, and I said white privilege. And so that there was a moment right then where I said in front of people, I think this is the part where people stop talking. And so I'd want to further this conversation. So he and I made plans to go to lunch, and we did. And I will say that he's become like one of my dearest friends. And it was, he's now one of my best friends. Like we chat, we text, we converse on, like we've conversed on the convention, what's going on. But there is something about, as a white female, when I am push towards resistance instead of going and reacting to that resistance, to just step in. And I think that those are the encounters that change things.
It feels scary. Did it feel scary in the moment? And does it require bravery, or does it just require giving yourself permission to go places you haven't been before?
I think
damn the torpedoes, full speed ahead.
I think the way the narrative I was raised with told me to be afraid. That somehow, if I went in, I don't know, I'd just be afraid that it wasn't safe. But that's not the truth. Every time I've gone in, my world has cracked wide open. It's just broadened. It's gotten brighter and bigger.
Well, you said, both on the program and in that essay, that when he asked you that question, your immediate response was, this is where the conversation usually stops.
Yeah.
And your advice is to take it further. Why do you think it stops at that point? Is it because it's such a roadblock that we don't know how to get around it, or we're too scared to get around it, or we don't want to hear that?
I think, based on what I've heard and listened to within myself and others, that there's a whole system set up to keep us from talking about that. Because if I begin to really address those issues, then I'm going to have to look at a lot of things about how I was raised, the way our cultures arrange, such that people as myself will stay in positions of power, truthfully, than folks like Patrick. And so I was raised to not talk about that.
Well, he's told you that you have to carry the torch. You have to do it because he can't. He doesn't have the power. You do.
Actually, what he said to me was, you go be you and I'll go be me, right? And that I can go into places where he may not be able to, but I'm also not going to speak for or assume that I know what is best for him. Either.
Although race is certainly a part of this, it's not just race that we're divided on. Our politics are incredibly divided, and there are other aspects of our lives that are incredibly divided, and one side simply will not entertain the thoughts or comments or ideas of the other. They are repugnant to the other side, no matter which side you're on. What do you think is the crux of this dysfunction we find ourselves in today?
This is where I don't know. I just don't know. All I know is what I can do. And, you know, I just believe at my core that what people want is to be seen, to be heard, and to know that they matter. I really believe that at my core. And there's just a variety of ways people achieve that. And I'm struggling with that.
How much of it do you think is driven by social media, where people can say anything, if not anonymously, at least to strangers, who then mm-hmm. don't really have an opportunity to look you in the eye and say, what did you say? Why do you say that? It's just throwing stuff up on the wall and walking away from it. Whereas you have gone around the country and actually spoken to people and taken the time to look them in the eye and let them talk. Is that the difference?
For me, that is the difference. So actually, I was at lunch with someone who is not in the same opinion as me on most things. We went to lunch. And I said, part of my problem is I can get pulled into the rabbit hole of social media just like anybody else. It's like I just start going down and then I'm like, I can't get out. And I've made some pretty conscious decisions as of late that I just really need to spend more time with people. And I don't know what, you know, going out and just spending time with, for example, tonight there's something called Our Bridge Kids, and it's an effort to work with immigrant and refugee kids. And so instead of spending time on social media, let's go spend time with each other.
So this book, The Wisdom Stories, is a collection of essays, stories, and journal entries from your past and your experiences and your present mm-hmm. as well. They're very short. You can sit down and read them in 30 seconds, some mm-hmm. of them, maybe sometimes less than 30 seconds. They're 88 mm-hmm. stories. They're not earth-shattering. They're not even pithy in some cases. They're just ordinary things that have happened in a moment in time. But as you sorted through the ones that you've kept a collection of these over the years, I assume, mm-hmm. from journals and things, as you sorted through your life, what made you choose these 88 stories? What was it about these 88 stories that you think we can glean something valuable from?
I think they're sort of funny because they're just kind of mundane. There's nothing significant about them. You know, it's like a time that I walked into the mall with my son, or the time I first spotted my daughter with the tattoo on her belly. You know, just these moments of like, oh my gosh, they're just ordinary. The time that I stood in line with a Starbucks and struck up a conversation with a truck driver in, you know, Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. You know, it's these things that make life, and I'm just convinced that it's in those moments where things shift, these little tiny moments.
Do you have a favorite story among these story?
I have to say that my favorites are always about my kids because they are the ones that completely redefined what motherhood. I had a whole narrative about what kind of mother I was. I thought I was sort of a soccer mom and everybody was going to just graduate from high school and it was going to be lovely, and that wasn't the story at all. So
what was the story? If I can ask?
Well, yeah, both of them ended up, my son didn't finish high school. And, you know, he went straight to New York to follow his passion, got his GED, fashion.
Okay.
And, you know, when your kid is standing in front of you at age 17 and says, I think I'm going to drop out of high school and go to New York, you're like, no, that's not happening. But then I had a moment, and I remember it so clearly, where I could say, I could either support him or not. Right. He was going. And so I said, okay, I'm supporting
you. I was going to ask you, your kids, Hank and Helen, mm-hmm. are throughout this book, and they're now young adults. Mm-hmm. How do they feel about mom writing about them when they were children, first of all, but secondly, just writing about them in general and throwing their personal behind-the-scenes stories out there to the world at large? How do they feel about it? Did you ask permission?
Of course, and actually let them read all the stories in advance. So
Did they edit?
No, there were actually, there were a couple stories that didn't make the book,
okay.
But they really, you know, it's just been our life. I've been very open about everything from my addiction to divorces, and, you know, they've just come to know that's just how we live.
Yeah. One of your stories, I think it's called Addiction, mm-hmm. opens with this sentence: on July 6th, 1993, I hit bottom. That's the beginning of your climb out of addiction. How difficult is that to put out there? I mean, we've talked about this on the air before, but are you just accustomed to being open about that?
I am just accustomed to being open about that. I don't have any fear around that anymore. I still have some fear, I mean, frankly, in discussing things around race and politics. So that's an area worth looking at.
Yeah. You are a mom. You're a former triathlete. That's why you were so interested in starting Girls on the Run to help young women. You're a recovering alcoholic. You've been successful in a lot of different things that you've tried to do, most of them relatively unorthodox. Most people in the world haven't attempted to do some of these things. And you've been working on finding yourself and your purpose. When you look back on it all that you've done, all that you've accomplished, the various different arenas that you've worked in, where this journey has taken you, what comes to your mind?
I'm so glad you asked me that question today, because yesterday I honestly had an experience with a woman in the morning, young woman.
You have 30 seconds.
Okay. If I can be a loving, peaceful presence for someone else, then let me be it. And that's really what I have found is my sort of role.
At the end of every essay, there is a place in this book for people to write their own thoughts about what they just read, and you also want readers to share their wisdom through your website at thewisdomstories@mollybarker.com. The book is called The Wisdom Stories, Finding Wisdom in the Ordinary. Molly Barker, great to see you again.
Thank you.
Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to helping customers select vehicles that fit one's lifestyle. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.